Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:53 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is April 26th, and I'm just off the plane and have been clicking through markets. And I think the one that really stuck out to me today was oil, down $3, and that's on fears about demand. And we've had quite a volatile period where it initially broke down on demand fears. Then OPEC Plus announced that they were going to shave a million barrels plus off of global supply, and prices rebounded, but the global economic environment is not improving, and there is clearly the potential that demand is going to fall further. And I think it's one thing that it strikes me as rather odd is the self-congratulatory feeling that you have in much of Europe, where Christine Lagarde 10 days ago was basically saying that they have completely got on top of the energy crisis, and that just thinking about how successful they've been and not talking about how much money it required. And then you have in the UK, where the hotel that I was staying in, they were heating the lobby, but they did not heat the hallways. So you had this enormous temperature difference between the public areas, and then the rooms. So you can definitely see that there are clear efforts underway to try and reduce demand. But then I thought it was also almost aggressive in terms of the marketing that is up in the arrivals or the arrivals area of Heathrow Airport, where there is this picture of an elephant next to some infrastructure. And then I don't know what the purpose of the elephant is, but basically it says that 110% is not enough. So they're not just calling for carbon neutral, but they're in fact saying that new pieces of infrastructure actually have to contribute instead of being energy consumers, they have to be energy producers. So, you know, we're really out there in fantasy land. But there are certainly measures underway to try and curtail demand for energy. And oil prices are pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. And this is not a good signal for the health of the global economy. And not least because we had this phenomenal advance in oil prices, where it goes from negative in March of 2020 for West Texas Intermediate, up to $120 in the space of 2 years. And then the clear threat of an energy crisis, which was only offset by incredible spending. Now, governments are thinking about how are they going to rein in that spending. The big hope for a refloating of the global economy was that once China came out of the 3-year lockdown for the pandemic, that they would flood the market with liquidity, and they don't seem to be particularly keen on that idea either. So we're definitely seeing some evidence here of weaker economic activity coming through. And of course, natural gas prices have been profoundly weak over the course of the last 6 months. And every time they have just look like they might rebound, then it's knocked right back down again. So it's still a downward bias to trading. And I don't believe that this is going to last indefinitely, but if we have a slowing global economic environment, then at the potential for a big jump in demand for natural gas might have to be put on the long finger. Then let's think about the dollar. And the dollar index has been a little weaker in here today. Now, I thought that it was a graphic that came to mind when I was writing comment of the day today. It was from last September, but what it really helped to highlight was that really big rallies in the dollar, where you get a very strong year-over-year change. In other words, sharp rallies in the dollar have generally tended to coincide with trouble. So we had the big rally in the dollar up to the peak in September. And since then, we've had several banks go bust and credit conditions looking rather tight. And of course, since September, there was also the pension crisis in the UK. But we can definitely see that in 2008, there was a big rally in the dollar. And then let's just pay attention to that, because all the way down here in 2000 through 2002, we hadn't seen a big upward trajectory in the dollar, but rather that it was trending lower and the year-over-year change was negative. Now let's just look at how gold performs in that environment and look at sufficient history to put it into perspective. So everybody is aware, particularly those that had been buying from 2001 all the way up to 2008, that gold pulled back very violently in 2008 because the price got up to 1,000 and then it came all the way back down into the 600. So that's a really profound decline. Then it rocketed higher as soon as interest rate cuts started to feed through, and there was a clear desire to devalue the currency. So gold went down first, then up after. Now let's then just zoom in on this period in 2000. So the Nasdaq, it didn't peak until into the beginning of 2000. Gold popped on the upside in 1999. So even though there was a recession in 2002 to 3, gold prices did come down, but not really in a very profound manner, and then they had broken out by 2002. So even though the Nasdaq was still going down into 2002, gold prices had recovered and were breaking on the upside. So when we think about then what's going to happen with gold next, well, I think we should be putting into perspective that it did rally rather quickly up to test the peak around 2000. And now the next question is, how much of a consolidation are we going to get? There's the expectation that when a recession unfolds, gold has to go down because there'll be a lot of panic selling and also contagion. But I don't think that gold is heavily owned right now by investors, so there won't be that same pressure as there was in 2008 after a 7-year bull market. And then the dollar is also trending downwards, so that is a fundamental support for gold overall. And gold has broken out in a large number of currencies. So I th rather think that the possibility here is that a consolidation will be relatively mild, and as soon as they start cutting interest rates, and it becomes quite obvious that the dollar will be sacrificed in service to trying to alleviate unemployment risk. I think that's when gold will really take off. Now, I think it's rather interesting what's happening with the S&P 500. So we've got big companies that have reported earnings. Microsoft popped on the upside on their bullish forecast for AI. Google did not. In fact, it's in negative territory today. And that was because they were more circumspect about where they think AI is going to fit into their business model. The S&P 500 is down now in a fairly dynamic manner this week, and it's coming down to test the region of the 200-day moving average. And a good part of the reason for that is because of the risk that we have within the banking sector. High interest rates, particularly at the short end of the curve, make it rather difficult for a bank business model to function. Even though the bigger banks got the benefit of deposit flight from the regional banks, they're now also starting to pull back. I think one of the riskiest banks out there is Goldman Sachs, and it is pausing now in the region of that 200-day moving average, having had a good size rebound. But this, to me at least, continues to look like a period of right-hand extension following the peak in late 2021, early 22. And Goldman, through its asset management arm, and asset management represents about 40% of their revenue, then they've got a huge exposure to commercial property. And I think that is something that will probably be recognized as the epicenter of risk right now. I think it's important to just look at some of the more like bellwether types of stocks. So, if we look at, for example, Home Depot, which was a company that did exceptionally well during the pandemic and more than doubled from the lows in 2020. Now it has pulled back in a violent manner. It broke its sequence of higher reaction lows, dropped back below the 200-day moving average in the early part of last year. Now it's encountering resistance again in the region of that 200-day moving average. Then Costco was a big beneficiary of people having more money in their pockets, buying in bulk and precautionary spending. The share popped to a new high in early 2022, pulled back very violently, broke the sequence of higher reaction lows, massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Now we've had a period of right-hand extension, which has been largely triangular in pattern, but there's very clearly a sequence of lower rally highs, and it is now pulling back from the most recent of those. So there is clear potential that it is going to break on the downside. And Walmart, where the share also pushed up to a new high in early 22 and failed, then has now regrouped and got all the way back up to test it again. It's now pulling back as well. So this is a lengthy range, and it's rather volatile. There's the potential we're looking at a type 3 top formation. Now, we don't see companies like Walmart pulling back in a violent manner very often, but there is absolutely no doubt that it has gone up a lot. And a part of that was because they were focusing more on online selling. But Walmart isn't one of the go-to locations for online selling. Then, of course, Amazon is. And Amazon's share price continues to trend lower, and it is now pausing here in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, as a potential beneficiary of AI, they might be able to sell that and tap into the enthusiasm. But the bigger point is that when we're talking about AI and how it's going to be used and how our business model is going to develop to try and make money from it, well, a lot of that is going to depend on what interest rates are like and how much leeway, or I guess how big a hurdle are some of these new ventures going to have to jump over in order to be or to generate returns that are over and above what's available from the bond market. The 10-year yield is pausing in the region of the 200-day moving average, and the yields are a little bit steadier in here today. Something that I think is also worth highlighting here is that United Healthcare, which is one of the really big beneficiaries of Obamacare and has risen to be the largest constituent of the Dow Jones Industrials Average, it broke its sequence of higher reaction lows. In the beginning of this year, it rebounded for 2 weeks and now it is pulling back again. Now, there's the potential here that it is going to break lower and that the rosy picture of health insurance companies being able to raise prices with impunity forever, well, that might start to be questioned because this does not look like a bullish chart. So, the Nasdaq's in positive territory, and it has certainly benefited from the rebound in Microsoft. But when we zoom in and look at the daily chart, it hasn't really been a great day, and it is rolling over now from this 13,000 level. So I think there's the potential that the Nasdaq's going to at least come back down below the 12,000 level and potentially come back and test the 10,000 level. And that we're still in an environment where liquidity conditions are tightening. And the big question then is, what are central banks going to do about it? Are they eventually going to cut rates? And when they do, well, how much are they going to cut them by? And how long will those rates stay down for? The H share index in Hong Kong was in positive territory today, but China doesn't appear to be enthusiastic about flooding the market with liquidity. The Australian market has got right up to test the 7,500 point level, and it is pausing, but it's certainly benefiting from the reasonable strength of commodity exports to China. Now, I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to what happens next with copper. If demand for oil is rolling over, there's obviously the potential then that demand for copper will also roll over. And it is now trading down through the 200-day moving average, and it has dropped below the psychological $4 level. Now, of course, people in the mining industry pay a lot more attention to the LME 3-month futures. And this here is it just gives us the levels at which people in the industry are looking at it. So it has been pausing below 9,000 for most of the last 2 months. Now it is breaking lower through the 200-day moving average. And there's obviously a lot of very bullish stories going circulating, and they've been circulating for quite some time about the shortages of copper. But China represents half of all copper demand, and if they're not going to stimulate construction of infrastructure, that opens up a lot of available supply for building whatever it is that countries prioritize for the next decade, whether it is infrastructure, power lines, or renewable energy infrastructure. If China is no lo if we see demand growth slowing and also potentially going negative in China, that's going to be a really significant headwind for copper. So I think what happens next and whether it is able to hold in the current level is going to be very give us a lot of information about what the most bullish forecasts are like in terms of their realizability. So it's certainly a more risky environment. And when we then think about India, well, India needs to build a ton of infrastructure, and they would really benefit from lower commodity prices. The Nifty index is continuing to hold here around the 200-day moving average. I don't really think that India is a very big or widely owned market by international investors. That's despite the fact that it has exhibited really great relative strength when compared to many other markets. They absolutely need to build infrastructure and continue to improve the trend of governance, and that would certainly be helped along by lower commodity prices. And of course, higher oil prices overall have been one of the factors that have limited the ability of the RBI to get in control of inflation. So oil prices coming down are certainly a bonus overall. Then we're in a much more volatile environment for food commodities, and orange juice prices are beginning to pause here, and they were down the limit in here today. So there's the potential here that we're going to see at least an unwinding of the short-term overbought condition. So I think that, and I mean, I've been practically a broken record, and it has been feeling like waiting for Godot. I do think that a demand shock and a deflationary shock are the most likely scenarios, and that there will be beautiful buying opportunities created in a larger number of shares, and that as we look out for the next decade, the march of the global consumer is going to be a big one, a big theme. The potential for the dollar to trend lower is going to be beneficial for the gold market, precious metals, and emerging markets overall. And ultimately, there will be more liquidity made available because central banks are a lot more afraid of deflation than inflation. So, what I'm really thinking is that we can expect that there will be downward pressure, and that subsequently we'll embark upon a new secular bull market. And the long-term cyclicality of the dollar suggests that it could trend lower for a prolonged period, as much as 7 years. And if that's the case, well then, select commodities and emerging markets will be leading on the upside. And there's the possibility that the UK and Europe will outperform the US equity markets because higher interest rates overall, and there's obviously the potential that the trend in yields has been broken, but that we're just going to get the first consolidation. And that will then be an additional opportunity to short bonds. Whereas I'm thinking that the clear opportunity in the short term is that bond yields will contract and that bond prices will rally. I don't believe that that's going to see, we're not going to see interest rates go all the way back down to zero and stay there. I think it's much more likely that we're due a bounce. And that once that medium-term bounce has taken place, that we can be prepared for a great deal of volatility in the bond markets. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.